The following audio is presented by Grace Church. For more about us, visit discovergrace.com, or you can download our free app by searching Grace Church Orlando on your phone or tablet. Now, we hope you enjoy the message.
I'm telling you, one day I'm going to dance up here because of that right there. That one, I don't know, I just feel that one. Hey, look, we are going through the Beatitudes right now, and we are going through these statements of Jesus where he's basically saying, if you're going to be a citizen in the kingdom of heaven, this is how we behave. This is how, one, we will receive the most joy in God, and this is the way that God will receive the most glory from our lives. And so we are going to live like this. Now, these sayings, they start off with the word blessed, right? So we've looked at our culture, and we've seen hashtag blessed and all the other stuff. And the way that we're defining blessed is a forever happiness, right? A forever happiness. Now, I'm not talking about like you just go around smiling all the time. By the way, do you do that? Who in here smiles just absolutely all the time? You just can't help it. That's your default face or whatever. Good for you guys, all right? Like you keep it up, okay? Because the rest of us are going to walk around like we hate everybody and someone like ate our last cookie, right? Like that's just the way that my face looks. And I'm sorry, I don't know what it is. You know, I can also say people who smile all the time, for us who don't, please don't ever tell us that, like, don't say things like, hey, are you happy? We'll tell your face about it, all right? Like, because then at that point, like, we'll tell your face about fists and things. So anyway, like, that's not the way to do it. But, so we're talking about forever happiness. Now, this forever happiness is not just a feeling. It's deeper than that. It's a peace that goes beyond all understanding. It's a joy that's unassailable. So that's what we're talking about when we talk about that. Now, we've already talked about the first two, and so let's put those up there. We see in Matthew 5:3, I think we'll put them up there. Maybe we will. Okay, here we go. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And we said that forever happy are those who realize their complete need for Jesus, because they get the kingdom now and forever. Let's keep going. We looked at last week. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Forever happy are those who mourn for their sin, because they will be forever received by God and not rejected by God. So we talked about that, and we're going to continue on. And there's a natural tie for our next beatitude. It's in Matthew 5:5. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Now, Jesus was described as meek. In 2 Corinthians 10:1, Paul says this, I, Paul, myself, entreat you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ. I who am humble when face to face with you, but bold towards you when I am away. So we're talking about Jesus is meek. And so he's our example of meekness. We're going to see this at all throughout at the sermon today. But one of the questions you have to answer is, what is meekness? And I used to think wrongly that meekness was just the absence of strength. You know what I mean? So in high school, when guys start working out and they start getting strong, I thought I was just really spiritual. You know what I mean? Like I was like, well, I'm meek. You know, and it turns out I was just weak. So anyway, that's not what meekness is. So meekness is not the absence of strength. Now, the old definition I would use is I would say this. I would say it was strength under control. That's what I would say, which is partially true, right? Because we read about Jesus that it says that if there was a bruised reed, he wouldn't break it. So it is about strength under control. But at the same time, you could have strength under control and still not be meek. Like a great example is I have a friend of mine who, I definitely called him last night and I was like, please let me tell this story. And he was like, absolutely. So here's what I'm going to tell you. He was about to punch someone. All right, I get their story before that and after that, but that's not the point. So let me just tell you this. He was about to punch someone. So he's in the air about to punch this guy. And he said he had the control of mind where he just went, you know what? Closed hand probably equals jail. So at the last second, as he's swinging, he opens his hand and just slaps the taste out of this guy's mouth, right? Still broke his glasses, knocked him to the ground, right? But he just open hand slapped him, which I'm going to go ahead and say, as someone who's never been punched in the face, I would also think that that would also help you. You know what I mean? Like that would help your masculinity to take that, right? Because later you have to say, how did you break your glasses? A guy slapped me, right? But anyway, so that's control, right? Like that is absolute control where he's like, nope, yep. And right, like that's control. But is that meek? Absolutely not. So here's my new definition of meekness. Not strength under control, but this. Strength submitted to God. Strength submitted to God. That's meekness. Because strength, and what that means is like that's submission of strength for a reason. Like submission, like it's strength controlled for a reason. For example, if any of you in here have served in the military, you submitted your strength to the military, right? You said, I will do what you want me to do. I will use it in the way that you want me to use it, right? And so you can submit your strength to things other than God. You can submit your strength to fear. And where does that lead? Meekness? That leads to cowardice. You can submit your strength to your own self, to your own ambition. Where does that lead? Meekness? No, it leads to pride, right? And so we choose in meekness to submit our strength to God. Because one, there are not consequences submitting our strength to God, right? There's consequences in submitting our strength to other things. But why do we submit our strength to God? Because here's what the scripture says about God. Isaiah 40:28. His understanding is inscrutable. By the way, when's the last time you used the word inscrutable? Use it today. It feels good. But anyway, it says that his understanding is inscrutable, meaning he knows how to use your strength wisely. He knows best how to use your, like, we can trust him. We can submit to him and trust him. Because, like, submitting to other things, they're not exactly trustworthy. Like, I'll give you an example. Just yesterday, I hear my son, my youngest son, Whit, and my daughter are playing in their room, and I hear all kinds of ruckus that I'm like, that's not normal. Like, something's happening, right? So I go in there, and here's what I see. There's a mattress on the floor. My daughter is laying on it, and my son is preparing to jump off the top bunk onto her, right? So he's like this, and I walk in, and I go, what? Which is basically parenting, right? Like, I walk in and I was just like, what? And so immediately Whit goes, she told me to do this. And then Piper immediately goes, yeah, I did. So Whit had submitted his strength to my daughter's lesser understanding, right? And I was like, Whit, this is so dumb. If you jump on her like that, she's going to get hurt. You're going to get hurt. But if you turn a little bit in the air and give her the elbow, you can be the champ, brother. You know what I mean? Like, So again, like, submitting our strength, when we submit it to God, we can trust him. Because why? His understanding is inscrutable. It's above everything. So we can trust him with that. And so how does this fit into the poor in spirit? And how does that fit into the mourning? Because when we recognize our spiritual need for God, then we're going to say, I can't be trusted with my own strength, right? Like there's a corruption within me. And so God, where else would I go? It's why, like, we would agree with Peter when he says this in John. We'll put it up here. Or there. There we go. There we go. When Peter says, Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. Like, Jesus says, do you guys want to leave? And he goes, where would we go? In the same way, once we've experienced being poor in spirit and recognizing our spiritual need for God, and once we've mourned over our sin and see that the brokenness, by the way, it starts in here, then we look at our strength and we go, God, where else can I go? Who else can I submit it to, right? Who else is trustworthy with it? And so it brings us to our knees, and it brings our strength to him. So we're going to be looking at James chapter 3 today. So if you have a Bible, you can turn there. James chapter 3, verse 13 through 18. There are Bibles on the ends of the row. We're going to put up a lot of the text here, but if you want to keep going back to it, I would encourage you to turn there. So we're going to look at this. This is James 3, 13 through 18. We're going to read it together real quick. Let's read it. Who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, don't boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder in every vile practice. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. One of the things I want you to see there in verse 13 is he connects meekness to wisdom. So he talks about this godly wisdom is a meekness, right? And so what I think happens in verse 17, he goes on to describe this meek wisdom. And so what I think as we explore these terms today, what we're going to see is this is what a meek life lived out looks like, right? This is following the meek wisdom of God. This is what our life looks like. And so let's start there. Number one, it's pure. It says, first of all, it's pure. It's from God. It's not corrupted. Like verse 15 says, earthly, unspiritual, demonic. In other words, meekness will make you more like Jesus, not less like Jesus. All right? It's a pure path for us to follow. Okay? Let's keep going there. It's peaceable. The second thing is it's peaceable. So how is that meekness? Well, that means that meekness won't mainly use its strength to fight for itself. Instead, it will use its strength to maintain peace. Because maintaining peace is not it's not as simple as keeping your mouth shut. It's not as simple as being quiet, right? Because I've always heard this said before that peace is not simply the absence of conflict, but it's the presence of righteousness or the presence of rightness or the presence of good things. So I would say it in this way. Peace is not just the absence of bad things happening, but it's the presence of good things happening. I'll give you an example. When your kids fight, right, and they get into it, you know, maybe you're sitting at the dinner table and somebody's kicking somebody under the table and they're just, I don't know, they're just bothering each other and they get into it and they start yelling at each other. And you tell them, apologize, right? Which I don't know what we're teaching, by the way. Can I just say that? Just be real honest as a parent. Like, what are we teaching in that moment? Apologize insincerely and don't mean it, right? But like, that's what we're telling them. Like, do this empty ritual. So anyway, so they like, sorry. And then they sit there and then they're quiet. Is that peace? That's not peace. That's plotting. That's what's happening, right? Like they're sitting there and they're like, as soon as he turns, I'm stabbing you, right? Like they're thinking of something, right? Is that just my kids? Anyway, so that's like, that's what's happening. When does peace exist? It exists when they're playing together again, when good is happening again, or maybe when they even have a good feeling towards them again. Maybe it's not even expressed in an action, but instead it's a good feeling towards them. So again, I would say peace is something we have to fight for, because peace is not just it's not just like reactive. It's not just the absence of something. It's the presence of good being done, right? And so if we're going to look at meekness and peace, we use our strength not to fight for ourselves, but we use it to fight for other people, right? We use it to fight for other people. And think about that. Think about a difficult person in your life where you struggle for peace. When you think about peace between the two of you, you fight for it. It is a fight. If that person's sitting next to you, keep your eyes straight ahead, okay? You just look at me. You look at me, I'll pray for you. All right, but anyway, like think about that. To maintain real peace, what does that require of you? You have to fight. You have to fight your negative feelings so that you can be kind towards them. You have to fight your expectations so that you can be patient with them. You have to fight to give them the benefit of the doubt. You have to fight your impulse to strike back and extend grace to them. You have to fight the impulse to ignore them and instead serve them, give them a gift, right? And we fight not to do it our way, but considerate of them. Peace is a fight, and meekness uses its strength not to fight for itself, but to fight for others. And Jesus is our ultimate example. Look at Colossians 1:20 on this screen. Here we go. And through him, Jesus, to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross. Like the peace that Jesus made for us was not simply him just sitting back and going, well, I'll just remove judgment. Not a problem. No, for him to make peace for us cost him everything. He had to fight for us at the cost of his own life, right? And so in the same way, meekness uses that strength to fight for others and not itself. Do we think that way though? Do we have those meek thoughts? When we have conflicts at work, is your first thought, how can I fight for this person? How can I fight to bring peace to this person? Or is your first thought, how can I fight this person, right? And that's a real thing. But if we're going to have this meek mindset of Christ, then that's what we would do. Meekness doesn't use its strength to fight for itself. It uses its strength to fight for others, to fight for peace. Let's keep going. Gentle. And gentleness is absolutely about strength control, okay? It's absolutely about meekness in the way that you think about strength control. For example, my twins are right in the middle. We got four kids. The twins are right in the middle. She, from day one, has loved babies, right? She loves babies like crazy. And so when her younger brother was born, she was like, I don't know, was she two yet, Angela? All right. Okay, well, if she shrugs, I'm safe to shrug. All right, so anyway... she's like two-ish, right? So she's still got a passy and whatever. And so we would bring like wit over to her and she would go, oh, and she'd have the passy and she'd go, baby. And she'd go over and then like we'd say, be gentle, okay, be gentle. And she would go, oh, to like go like pet the head. And she would just be like, oh, God, like right in the soft spot, right? Like just, there's just no gentleness, which is why like he still can't do math. But anyway, So strength under control is absolutely part of gentleness. But gentleness is more than that. I think gentleness is mainly about consideration, right? Gentleness is mainly about consideration. Because think about it. Gentleness is not objective. It's subjective, right? Like for example, I do something with my kids that my wife hates. I do this thing where my boys will come in our bedroom and they'll tell me to throw them. And so I'll take them and then I will just chunk them and then they land on the bed. Now, sometimes they bounce off. It's fine. They're boys. All right. Like it's character building. They, by the way, they've never hit the ground then and gotten upset. They hit the ground then and they're like, again. Right. So anyway, so that's great. But my daughter, like when she comes in, she's like, throw me. I'm like, absolutely, baby girl. And I pick her up and I'm like, yay. Ah. You know what I mean? Like drop her like right above the bed. Right. Because here's the thing. When she hits like a weird way, like if she hits her elbow first or something, she's not hurt at all, but she immediately looks at me and she's like, why have you betrayed me? Right? Like it crushes her, right? So gentle, it's different, right? Gentleness is different for other people. So it's about consideration. So the meek are considerate of how to best use their strength to build others up and not tear them down. The meek are thinking not just about the message they're speaking, but about how the hearer will hear the message they're speaking. It's all about consideration. That's what meekness does. It restrains its strength for the benefit of the other person. I think a great example of this, and one that I absolutely love, is when Jesus deals with Mary and Martha. So what happens is He has a friend, Lazarus, who dies. And so Jesus is headed that way. He's already told everybody, hey, he's just asleep. It's cool. I'm going to raise him from the dead. So he's on his way, right? He goes to meet Mary and Martha, so the sisters of Lazarus, the sisters of the dead man, and they're upset. And I want you to see how he handles them differently. And look at Martha. Martha shows up first to meet him. Let's look at it here. John 11, 21 to 27. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask. And Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know he'll rise again in the resurrection at the last day. And Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will, even though they die, and whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she replied. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world. All right, so that's how he handles Martha, okay? Her brother's just dead. Lord, if you had been here, he wouldn't be dead. And they have this, like, conversation. He's almost reasoning with her, right? And so then let's see what he does to Mary, though. Same thing. Next passage. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet. What did she say? Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. Sisters of the same brother say the exact same thing to Jesus. What's her response? What's his response? When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled and said, where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord. They replied, and Jesus wept. Two completely different responses of Jesus. Jesus comes up to Martha. Martha goes, Lord, if you had been here. And he goes, let me explain, right? And Mary goes, if you had been here, and Jesus weeps with her. Why? Because they're different. They're wired differently, right? Like you think about Martha. The first time we see Mary and Martha is at dinner, right? Jesus has shown up, and so Martha's in there busy and comes out and basically argues with Jesus. Hey, look, we got to do it this way, and you got to do this and whatever. And maybe some of you in this room, you're like, you're talking straight to me, and I don't appreciate it. But like maybe that's you, right? And they're like, you got to do it this way and all this stuff. And Jesus is like, I don't have to do it this way. And they like have this conversation, right? Mary, who's, I don't know, Enneagram 7 maybe, I don't know, or like 4, I don't know. She sees Jesus and she's like, food, whatever. And she sits down at his feet and she's just hanging out with Jesus, right? They're very different people. Martha is this type A doer. I've got a million different lists, right? Enneagram 1, that's you, right? Like that's Martha. And then Mary's not. And so Jesus, like, he doesn't come to Mary and go, I just told Martha this. Look, I'm the resurrection and the life, all right? He doesn't say that to her. Why? She doesn't need that in that moment. Maybe those words, although they're life-giving, maybe they would have crushed her, you know? Like maybe it's the right thing to say at the wrong time. And so instead, Jesus is incredibly considerate. And so again, the meek are considerate of how to best use their strength to build others up and not tear them down. You know what meek people don't say? Well, that's just how I am. You know what meek people don't say? I'm just a strong leader. Well, that's not what I meant. Oh, well, that's what they heard? Well, that's their problem. They need to figure it out. Meek people don't talk like that. Like, meek bosses don't talk like that. Meek coworkers don't talk to each other like that. Meek parents don't talk to their children like that, right? Like, it's an incredibly challenging thing. Let's keep going. The fourth description here is, it's open to reason. Now, the opposite of being open to reason, I would say, is being a know-it-all, right? And you guys know the marks of a know-it-all. Like, a marks of a know-it-all, they're the loudest, their opinion's going to be heard, right? They're also really defensive and angry if you challenge them. Like, how dare you have a different opinion? Can I tell you a story of a friend of mine that I think fits this perfectly? So I have a friend of mine who not a football fan, like not an NFL fan at all. We started hanging out, Titans fan, like from Tennessee, go wild card. So anyway, sports reference. So anyway, we started hanging out. He would start watching the Titans games with me, not because he's like football, let's go football, but because he knew I loved it, right? So we would hang out and we'd watch it. And so my friend, although he's not a big football fan, he hates referees in all forms. Like he hates them. And he believes that no matter what game he's watching or what team he's pulling for, the referees are against him. It's like they get together and they're like, oh, hey, Mark, come here. Did you see this? Did you see this? Yeah, he's watching again. Yeah, yeah. What team do you think? I don't know. Let's see. The Titans? Oh, we're going to mess with them today, right? So that's his belief that that's happening. So one day we're watching the game. Like so much so, you cannot challenge that. So one day we're watching the game, and our tight end is forced out of bounds. And rather than coming back inbounds, our tight end runs all the way. He runs 20 yards out of bounds and then pops in the back of the end zone. Now, I don't know if you know anything about football, but you can't do that, right? Like you just can't do that. And so he just runs all the way around, and he pops in, and then our quarterback throws it to him. So it looks like a touchdown because he caught the ball in the special grass or end zone. So anyway, he catches the football there, right? And it looks like a touchdown. And so my friend's like, yeah, touchdown. I was like, no, it's not. He's an idiot. Like, he ran 20 yards out of bounds or whatever. So they throw the flag. They call it. It's obvious. The commentators are laughing because it's an unbelievable play. It's so dumb, right? And so anyway, my friend's like so mad. And he's like, of course the referees would take this touchdown away. Of course they're against us. And I was like, us? You know what I mean? Like, I don't, what is this? But anyway, and so I was like, no, man, it's a good call. Like, that was super dumb. It's 100% our fault or whatever. And he's like, are you a referee? Like, he immediately turned on me. And I was like, I'm wearing a Titans hat, right? Like, what is happening right now, right? But that's a know-it-all, right? They're defensive and angry. You can't tell me what to do. And the biggest thing I think about a know-it-all, the opposite of being open to reason, is you insist on your own way. Like, we're going to do it my way. We're going to eat where I want to eat. We're going to do what I want to do, right? And in meekness, let's put this up here. In meekness, although you may have the strength authoritatively, intellectually, or even physically to insist on your own way, you choose to listen. You may have the strength. You absolutely may have the authority to say, it's my way. I don't have to listen to you. You may have the intellectual ability to say, I'm going to figure this out. I don't need to listen to you. Or maybe even like physically, right? You can intimidate people, right? I'm going to insist on my own way. I don't know what that's like. If that's your story, please come tell me. But anyway, like, to insist on your own way, but instead you choose to listen, right? And I'm not talking about, like, listening is like not an empty exercise here. True listening and meekness is being open to learn and being open to influence. Like, this isn't just some empty exercise where I'm like, well, he's got to be heard. So, okay. Yeah, no, go ahead. Tell me what you think. Fantastic, right? That's not real listening. Real listening is I'm open to what you're going to say, and I'm open to learn something, right? I'm open to allow you to influence my decision. That's real listening. And we see Jesus do it. Check this out in Matthew 15. Watch him do this. A Canaanite woman from that vicinity came to him crying out, Lord, son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is demon-possessed and suffering terribly. Jesus didn't answer a word. So his disciples came to him and urged him, send her away, for she keeps crying out after us. Pause real quick. That is so grotesque. This woman is following Jesus and saying, my daughter is demon-possessed and she's suffering. And the disciples are like, Lord, send her away. She's getting on our nerves. Like, tell her to shut up. They don't say, Lord, would you please act on her behalf? Like, that is so grotesque. And here's the thing. As I point my finger at them, immediately I'm pointing at myself. Like, how many times do I see the needs of people in front of me who are suffering, and I'm like, oh, I just can't do it. It's too much. I can't do it. I'm going to go over here and watch Netflix. I don't want to think about hard things, right? Oh, it's so grotesque, and it's in my heart too. But anyway, so his disciples came to him and urged him, send her away, for she keeps crying out after us. That's not listening. That's cutting her off. What does Jesus say? He says, I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. He engages her. He doesn't say, get out of here, right? No, he's listening. The woman came and knelt before him. Let's keep going. Lord, help me, she said. He replied, it's not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs. She said, yes, it is, Lord. She said, even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the master's table. Then Jesus said to her, woman, you have great faith, and your request is granted. And her daughter was healed at that moment. I love that. Like, Jesus engaged with this woman. He didn't cut her off. He had all authority to say, they're right, get out of here. He had all authority, right, to cut her off and say, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, right? But instead, what does he say? He engages her in a conversation, and he's allowing her words to influence him, to influence what he's going to do in that moment. It's wonderful. It's a meek form of listening. It's beautiful. I love what he's doing. It's open to reason, right? And by the way, this passage we could point to for ourselves as well in hope and prayer. Why do we persist in prayer? Because the Lord allows our words to matter. That's a beautiful thing, right? So again, in meekness, although you may have the strength, although you may have the authoritatively or intellectual strength or physical strength to insist on your own way, instead, you choose to listen. And so are we really listening to the people that God has placed around us? Are we shutting them out? Are we really listening to our kids and allowing their words to influence us? Are we really listening to our coworkers? Are we really listening to our employees? Are we really listening to our friends? Or are we shutting them out? Because I know what they're going to say. I know what they're going to bring to the table, and I'm going to do it this way, right? I had my former pastor at my old church. Let me tell you this. He hires me. I'm 26 years old, right? So I am ready. I think I know absolutely everything. This isn't true of all 20-year-olds, please. And if you're in your 20s, I'm not saying this is true of you. I'm sure it's not. But of me, it was absolutely true. I'm 26. I'm going to change the world. I have all the answers because I went to school for a little bit, all right? Like, and I have the student loans, so it's going to be awesome. And I went to school in Mississippi, so anyway, so like I'm... I'm going to change the world, right? And so I come in, and this pastor at the time, he's got 40 years of experience on me, 40 years. And I would come in his office, and I would say, you know what? I have an opinion about what we're doing around here, right? He had all the authority in the world to say, get out of here. Like, get out of my office. He had all the authority in the natural world to just smack me across the face, right? He had all the authority in the world to fire me. He had all the authority in the world to say, I don't have to listen to you. You know what he did? He said, okay, have a seat. And he listened to me. He really listened to me. And sometimes there were things that I said that it actually influenced the decisions that he made, right? And most of the time, that wasn't true, right? Because, like, by God's grace, he shouldn't do everything that I had said, right? But you know what? My words mattered to him. Like, he made my words matter to him. He didn't have to do that. I felt so loved, and I felt so valued. And man, I hope that's true of me. And that's true of Jesus. How did she walk away? The disciples made her feel what? Like nothing. But what did Jesus do? He restored her. Like, made her, she had value. Right? Even ends with complimenting her, right? He's hearing her out. And so do we do that? Like, do we listen to our children like that? Do we listen to our coworkers like that? Do we listen to our friends like that? Where you might have the right to say, I don't care what you say. You might have all the authority in the world to say, I don't need your advice, right? But do we do that? Do we come with the meekness of Jesus to say, you're valuable. So what you think is valuable. It doesn't mean I'll do everything you say, but it means that I'm going to make sure that your words matter to me. Because that's what meekness does. It's a beautiful thing. Let's keep going. He says it's full of mercy and good fruits. So mercy is not getting what we deserve. So meekness is merciful in the way that meekness can absorb criticism and attacks and not lash out. That's meekness, right? It reserves its strength and it extends mercy instead of lashing back out. One of my favorite examples of this is in Numbers chapter 12, and you're like, people really read that? I know. So in Numbers chapter 12, so Moses is leading the people, and he's got his brother and sister with him. He's got Miriam and Aaron with him, right? And what has happened, I got to read you one of these verses. Here's what happened, verse 2. And they said, Miriam and Aaron, they're speaking against Moses because he married a Cushite woman. They're racist. It's in the Bible. They're racist, right? They're saying, like, I don't know if Moses knows what he's doing. Look at who he selected as a wife, right? So look at verse 2. And they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not also spoken through us also, right? So that's what they're saying to each other. They're like, I don't even know if we can trust him anymore. We can trust his judgment. But hasn't God spoken to me? Hasn't God spoken to you? Like, maybe we should be leading the people. And this is the terrifying part. And the Lord heard it. All right? Then it says this in verse 3, which is so strange. Now the man Moses was very meek. More than all the people were on the face of the earth. Why did he say that? Why did it say that he was meek? Because of what happens next. So it says Moses is meek. So here's what happens, okay? This is crazy. So the three of them are meeting together, right? And God says, hey, go back out. So they all, like, leave the tent of meeting where they meet God. Then a pillar of cloud lowers down on the tent of meeting. And he goes, hey, Miriam and Aaron, why don't you come over here? I got to talk to you. Oh, right? Like, have you ever been called to the principal's office? That's scary. But could the principal legally kill you? No, right? But here, absolutely. So anyway, so he goes like, hey, Moses, you wait over here. Hey, guys, come here. Let me talk to you. So they come in to talk to God. Oh, my gosh, it is rough, right? Like, it's terrifying to think about, right? And so basically, like, it says that his anger is kindled against them. Like, he is so angry with them. For speaking against Moses. He's like, I talked to Moses face to face, all right? There's nobody like him, okay? Like, how dare you speak against him? How dare you speak against his leadership, right? So what happens ultimately is Miriam is struck with leprosy. And so then, like, even Moses calls out on her behalf. Moses says, God, would you please heal? Which I got to think about, like, Aaron wasn't struck with leprosy. You got to think that's got to be scarier. If you're meeting with God and he's angry with you and you turn to her and she's covered in leprosy and you look at you and you look fine, you're like, are my insides gone? Like, you don't know. You know what I mean? Like, you're just like, why? But anyway, so she's got leprosy. And so like, Moses cries out to God. And he literally says, please, God, heal her. Please. That's what he says. He says, please, twice. Like, he's begging God. And God says, and basically God says, like, if she had just one of the least offenses in the camp, you would send her out for 7 days anyway. So you're going to send her out for 7 days from the camp. And then she can come back, right? So we see God do a work for her only after that peace. And so what does this show us? Moses had all the authority in the world to lash out against them, right? Like Moses had all the right to not extend mercy to Miriam, to not extend mercy to Aaron, right? He could have handled it. He could have said, oh, hey, I'm the leader, so you guys are out, right? He could have done that, but he doesn't. He extends mercy, right? It's a beautiful, beautiful picture. Why? Because meekness trusts God and extends mercy. Look at what happens. Moses extended mercy, and what happened to the unrighteousness? What happened to the injustice? God handled it. God fought for Moses. Moses stood up for God in the sense that he said, you're merciful, so I'm going to be merciful, right? And God says, thank you. Now I'll fight for you, right? He stands for him. So we can trust him, right? So when we're wronged, do we use our strength to lash out, or instead do we extend mercy to one another? This should be the mark of all of us. I know I've told this story before, but I think it's impactful, and it absolutely illustrates this. My father, one time, I borrowed his car. He had this little Honda, and I pulled it into his garage, and I didn't pull it up far enough, and I closed the garage. And the garage, you know, the garage door, it has those, like, just, I don't know, metal on the inside of the door. I don't know, support beams. So anyway, construction's a real passion of mine. So anyway, it lowers down, and two of those just cut into his bumper, like just like take a bite out of his bumper, right? So I go to leave, and he like hears it. Like you could hear it close. It was like, hur! And I was like, and I'm gone. So anyway, like I'm starting to leave, and I'm not a teenager at this point, all right? Like I'm in my 20s. I'm married. I'm a seminary at this point, right? And so he's following me down the driveway. He goes, hey. Look what you just did. And I was like, oh, your garage did that. So anyway, I go over there and I look at it, and he's like, hey, would you just do me a favor? Would you just, like, I don't know, call your insurance company and see if that something that they cover or whatever? But if it's cost too much, don't worry about it. But let's just check anyway. I was being so disobedient with my money towards God. I didn't want trusting him at all with money. That was like a pressure point for me. That was like, I was so stressed out about it. If you talked to me about money, I would lose my mind. So I did. I lashed out at my dad, and I was like, over that? That'll bankrupt me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, how dare you? This stupid car, like, it's got dents all over. You care about this bumper? Like, I am just letting him have it in the way that only a son can to a father, right? I'm just letting him have it, right? And my dad just stands there. I truly don't think he knows what to do, because as I found out as a dad, I thought you guys did know what you're doing until I became a dad. I'm like, oh, no, this is just terrifying all the way through, right? And we act real confident. We're like, yeah, that's what we're going to do. And we look at each other. I'm like, I think we messed up. I have no idea. But anyway, so I'm sure in that moment, he doesn't know what to do. But you know what he does? He has all the ability to strike back. He has all the ability to make me pay. But you know what he does? He says, son, what's wrong? I was like, what's wrong? You're asking me about money. He goes, no, forget about it. Forget the car. It doesn't matter. I don't care. Are you okay? Are you and Angela okay? What's wrong with you, right? And he just extends his mercy towards me. And that's what meekness does. Meekness in the moment when it's slapped, it absorbs the slap and it says, are you okay? That's the picture of meekness. That's what Jesus tells us. When someone slaps you, present to them the other cheek also. Why? Because it's gracious. It's considerate. It's merciful, right? And so we respond in kind in that way. Lastly, let's look at the last description here. Impartial and sincere. So look at impartial. I think they're connected. Impartial comes from James 2. And if you go back to James 2 in this book here, in verse 2 through 4, it's talking about people are showing partiality to one another because they see people that are rich. Like they look at people and they're like, those are Yeezys. You come to the front, right? So anyway, like they're looking at their clothes and they're literally saying, you have gold on. You come sit in the front, right, of the congregation. Oh, that's a nice robe. You get communion first, right? So they are literally showing partiality. And why does that feel so gross? What's wrong with that? Because what are they doing? When you show partiality, how do you get to partiality? You make a judgment call. You judge somebody. You make a judgment call. You categorize somebody, and then you show them partiality, right? And so the core problem with that is judgment, because we aren't qualified judges. Think about a real judge. Think about what a real judge is supposed to do. A real judge is supposed to look at all of the, before they make a decision, they're supposed to look at all the evidence that's submitted, right? That's why a judge doesn't rule in the middle of a court case. A judge rules at the end, after the closing arguments. Basically, both sides are saying, this is all the evidence we're bringing. This is all the information, right? So a judge waits to have all the information. Then when they make the decision, what they're supposed to do is to remove their own personal feelings, but instead connect the verdict to the law. Like, I have all this evidence. Now, what does the law say? They're supposed to remove their own feelings from it. Do you do that in your day-to-day life? Absolutely not. Is there ever a time where you have all the information? No. Is there ever a time where you're impartial? Absolutely not. There's never a time where someone's offended me and I'm like, hold on one second. Let me remove myself from this. So you came in and you felt this way. And Grant, I'm going to say third person for now, right? Grant felt this way. What would be fair? No, instead, I'm like, oh, open hand, right? Like, that's what I'm doing in that moment, right? So we don't do that. Now, imagine if a judge judged like we do. Imagine if a judge in court judged like we do. You know what would happen? So the defendant would walk in, and they would go, oh, no, that's a murderer, right? That's a murderer. And they're like, judge, we haven't, shut up. That's a murderer because look at his haircut. I don't know. I don't like it. Only a psycho would cut their hair like that. All right. So that's a murder. Boom. Life in prison. Right. And they'd be like, judge, he was here for a speeding ticket. Right. And you're like, but yeah, I got a feeling. You know what I'm saying? Like a judge that would judge like that wouldn't be just. And that's how we judge all the time. Right. And so we can't ever come to a place of partiality because we can't be trusted to judge well. And so meekness instead restrains its ability to judge. We can judge. Oh, I can be the most judgmental of all, right? Anybody want to raise their hand? I'll judge you real quick. No, but like we can judge all the time. I saw you kind of raise your hand. I'll get you after. Anyway, we can judge with the best of them, but meekness says, I'm not going to. Like, I'm going to reserve that, right? And Jesus did it. It's beautiful. Can I tell you, in Luke 7, he's having dinner, and this woman comes in and starts washing his feet. And listen to what the Pharisees say. Verse 39, when the Pharisees who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who's touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she's a sinner. How does he know that? How does he come to that realization? How has he put her in this category? He judged her. Could he possibly have all the information? Absolutely not. Could he have possibly removed his own feelings? Absolutely not, right? He doesn't. He judges. And Jesus didn't. Right? Jesus didn't. Which, side note, don't you love the fact that when people get you so wrong, Jesus always gets you so right? Isn't that beautiful? Like, this woman came in and they judged her and categorized her as this and wrote her off as this, and they got it wrong because they're bad at judgment, right? Like, we're bad judges, right? And Jesus instead got her right and saw her heart and saw who she really is and saw her repentance, right? And so meekness, like Jesus, restrains its ability to judge. And that's where impartiality leads us to sincerity. Because the opposite of sincerity is what? Insincerity, right? Which is what? That's pretense. That's anything deceitful. Well, why would we do that? Why would we not be sincere with one another? Because check this out. If we have passed judgment on someone, we aren't dealing with them according to the truth about them, but according to our judgment of them. Are you with me? Let's go back to that. Did I hit something? Okay, here we go. If we pass judgment on someone, we aren't dealing with them according to the truth about them, but according to our judgment of them. Our care of them will never be sincere if we're not dealing with who they really are. If we're dealing with some caricature in our head that we've made of them in our imperfect judgment, then we'll never be sincere towards them. We'll never have sincere care towards them, right? An example, my dad, he was in advertising for years, and he did advertising for the suit store in Memphis, and it was like a really nice suit store. It was like the male version of the Pretty Woman scene, you know what I mean, when she walks in, you work on commission? Anyway, like, it was that, right? It was like a really nice place, and so I would walk in there sometimes to drop things off for him or to pick things up, and I would walk in, and they wouldn't even look at me, right? Like, they would see me come in, and they'd be like, ugh. Right? Because they know they're probably not getting a sale. You know what I mean? And so I'm walking in and they treat me that way. But then I would tell them, oh, hey, I'm Nick's son. And as soon as I would say that, everything would change. Like, everything would change. And they would be like, oh, hey, oh, it's Nick's. Hey, come on over here, Ralph, right? So anyway, everybody works there is named Ralph. I don't know. But anyway, they would call me over there, right? And everything would change, right? And it's easy to wag our finger at people like that and say, how dare you categorize those people hastily? How dare you treat them like that? Why don't you treat them like they actually are? But we do it all the time. You have one bad interaction with your neighbor, and you've already judged them, and you put them in this category of they're rude or they're crazy, and I'm just going to avoid them from now on. Are you being sincere towards them? No, that's insincere. You don't know them. You don't know what's really going on. And we do it at work. Like, there are people that the only time we interact with them is at work, and they're difficult to work with for some reason, and you've judged them. And you said, oh, they're just the worst. And every time I do, I'm going to be short with them and I'm going to be quick and I'm just going to try to limit my time around them. But you don't know. You don't know what's going on. What if they go home to the worst situation possible? And God's putting you in their sphere of influence to sincerely love them because no one else does. But you can't. You can't sincerely love them if we've already judged them. Meekness restrains this ability to judge so that it can be true and it's care for others. And the very first youth group that I ever had, there was a kid there who was an absolute, just a handful. He was just a screw up by every definition, and everybody would agree with that, right? And people in the church had judged him that way, and because he would absolutely act out. We would be in the middle of like teaching, like the youth group teaching or whatever, and he would just yell a curse word, right? Like he would just yell it, because he wanted the attention, he wanted to be disruptive or whatever. So I would just yell it back. No, I'm just kidding. No, I wouldn't. My wife would. But anyway, we would. But he was like a screw up, and people kept writing him off for that. And they couldn't sincerely care about him, couldn't sincerely love him because they had already categorized him as a screw up. And that's just the way he is. And that's all we need to know. We have all the information we need. So one day, this kid was 14 years old. One day, he said, hey, can you bring me home after church? My grandmother can't come get me. I was like, yeah, no problem. I go, where am I taking you? And he goes, my dad's house. I live with my dad now. I was like, okay, great. So I go to drop him off. He goes, hey, can you come in for a second? I want to show you something. So he wanted to show me like some video game thing that he got or whatever. So I walk in and I go, hey, man, where's your dad? He goes, I don't know. And I go, oh, okay. Well, when's he going to be home? And he goes, I don't know. His dad would leave for days at a time. Just leave. He's 14 years old. His dad would just leave. I was wrong. We were wrong about him, right? We had jumped to this conclusion, and so our care for him, it wasn't sincere. I wasn't loving towards him. We weren't patient towards him. We weren't sincerely seeing him. Why? Because we'd already judged him. He's a screw-up. He yells curse words. What a little punk. And this kid's a victim, you know? And so after that day, like after gaining all that information, I saw him for who he was, and my love for him became sincere, and my care for him came sincere, you know? And if we want to care for people like that, then we won't rush to judgment. And what's the result? Let's go back to Matthew 5:5. If we choose to live meekness in that way, we'll inherit the earth. Which has got to be crazy, the people hearing him say that for the first time. Because they're looking at everyone in power and they're like, none of them are meek. Like, Herod didn't gain power because he was like, what do you guys want to do, right? Now, Herod killed a lot of people to get there, right? Like, there is no way that this works. But let's look at the inheritance. Like, of course it's an eternal inheritance, but let's look at right now. Those who have gained the world without meekness, what kind of world have they gained? Think about that. What kind of world have they gained? The scripture there in James 3, it says, disorder and every vile practice. That's what they've gained. Like, they've gained a world of disorder with every vile practice. What kind of world have they really gained, right? But when you think about the meek will inherit what? They'll inherit the earth. What kind of earth? A better earth, right? The scriptures say there in James 3, a harvest of righteousness. Just think about the definition of meekness. And let me ask you this. Like, how much better would your life be if you stopped jumping to judgment about others and sincerely cared for them as they are? How much better would your life be? How much of a better inheritance would that be? Or think about this. What if you fought for peace more? What if you were considerate more and you were gentle more? How much better of an inheritance would you have then? That's what we get, right? And so as we close today, I want to close in prayer because meekness isn't trivial. And it's not something that some people have a certain personality type towards and others don't. It's not trivial and it's not easy. In fact, it's a fruit of God working in our life. It's evidence of the Holy Spirit at work in our life. It's something he has to do in us, right? And so I want to stop and I want to pray for all of us as we endeavor to live lives of meekness, as we endeavor to live lives where we can be considerate beyond consideration, where we can not jump to judgment, but instead we can love people and be sincere towards them. So let me pray for us now. Father God, we confess our shortcomings when it comes to meekness, Father. We confess that we've used our own strength for ourselves We confess that we've submitted our own strength to ourselves. We've committed our strength to our ambitions. We've committed our strength to our fears. We've committed our strength to all kinds of things. But God, we want to submit our strength to you. We trust that you have the highest wisdom. We trust that you have all of the understanding to know how to guide us well, to use our strength in a way that will build others up and not tear them down. So, Father, we submit it to you. I submit my authority as a pastor and as a father and as a husband, and I submit my position. I submit my intellect. I submit everything that you've given me, everything that could be a strength. I submit it all to you, that you would teach me to be meek like you're meek. And so, Father, I pray that whatever connected with us today, like whatever word connected today with people in this room, that, Father, you would, like, just, don't, please don't leave us alone with that. Like, just keep it there, just tapping on our hearts and tapping on our heads, so that we could, like, really find life today. We could really take a step towards you today in meekness. And God, we thank you for your meekness towards us. It's your meekness that led you to the cross for us. It's your meekness that is patient with our rebellion. It's your meekness that keeps the door open when we're ready to come home. In fact, it's your meekness that doesn't wait for us to come home. It's your meekness that runs after us. So God, we are so grateful. God, may we live as those who've been pursued by a meek God. May we live lives of meekness, strength submitted to you, fighting for others, not fighting for ourselves, being considerate of others, not considerate of ourselves, not judging others, being sincere in our love and care for one another. We love you. We thank you for doing this work in us.